Welcome back to Retirerite. Retirerite is a podcast for Australians thinking about retirement. If you're over 50 or 55 and heading towards retirement and you want to get your retirement sorted, this is the podcast for you. I'm Martin McGrath, the host of the podcast, financial advisor based on the Central Coast of New South Wales from Financial Edge Group, and we help people all around Australia get their retirement sorted. On today's episode, we're joined by James Spiridon from Challenger, and we're talking about annuities. What are they? How they work? When people should consider them? Some of the myths about how they all fit together. Challenger are Australia's largest provider of annuities. Thanks for joining us, James. For our listeners, can you explain how and where you fit into the world of annuities?
Absolutely. So I'm a business development manager here at Challenger, and I work day to day very closely with advisors across New South Wales, where we deliver insights regarding research and retirement, what's happening in markets, and working very intimately with advisors in building strategies for their clients to help them live the most confidence in their retirement.
And that's why we've got you on, mate. Let's jump into it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
James, just for our listeners, can you give them an understanding of who you are and how you fit in the world of Challenger and annuities?
Of course. So Martin, the first thing I just wanted to say is thank you for having me on, and we really appreciate the work you guys are doing with the Retirerite podcast. Where I fit in the Challenger world, I'm a business development manager here at Challenger, one of six in the New South Wales team and one of 20 across the country. And we work really closely with financial advisors in helping them understand the risks in retirement and ultimately creating a best of breed retirement portfolio for their people, which ultimately comes down to generating income in retirement.
Perfect. So annuities are something that we consider when we're looking for retirees. So let's answer some of those questions today, and let's start with a simple one. What is an annuity?
It's a great question. It's one that's covered with a lot of misconceptions and tips and traps, but in a really simple sense, Martin, an annuity is an investment into an income stream, which can be purchased with superannuation or private money. There's a number of options, which I'm sure we'll touch on today, but in a simple sense, it's an investment into an income stream.
And you mentioned there's different types of annuities. And so just breaking that down, basically someone is buying one or handing some money over and then they get a regular payment back. So there's different types. Can you explain some of those different types of annuities that people might know or might consider?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's three main categories. The first is the term annuity. The second is the lifetime annuity. And the third is our purpose-built aged care annuity, which for the sake of today's conversation, we'll park. Today, we'll really focus our conversation around term and around lifetime annuities.
So let's start with term. I mean, we have used all three and we do use all three with different clients in different situations. We might talk about when some of those fit, but we're staying with the basics. So let's talk about a term annuity. The name suggests it's a little bit, but I'm guessing that's for a term.
Yeah, absolutely. So with a term annuity, Martin, clients can select a term between 1 and 50 years. And over that term, they can choose to receive their interest monthly, quarterly, half yearly, or yearly. The other option that you have within a term annuity is this concept called residual capital value, or RCV, and that represents the amount of your capital that's paid to you at the end of your term. So let's say, for example, you decided to receive interest monthly over a three-year term. Residual capital value 100 would mean you would only receive interest for 3 years, and at the end of the term, you'd receive the lump sum investment back. If you selected RCV 0, over the term each month, you'd receive interest and capital. And at the end of your term, you'd have effectively received all of your income back.
So let's put some figures around that as we can. And maybe the interest rates will change and vary. But so someone might put $100,000 in a term annuity for 3 years.
Yep.
That might be a 5% interest rate, no guarantees, disclaimer, the rates will change all the time. And so how would that work if they had they want all their money back at the end, what's called an RVC 100? So what happens? And if you mentioned there's different frequency, does Challenger decide when they get their interest? Do they decide when they get their interest?
Yeah, great question. And it often points back to the beauty of having an advisor, because they'll help guide you in how to tailor and structure an annuity so it fits your needs and what it is that you're ultimately trying to achieve. The client has the choice as to whether they select a particular term or a particular payment frequency. And so oftentimes it's aligned to a particular expense they're covering for. So if we look at RCV zero term annuities, people often use those to help pay for school fees, where they invest a lump sum and over a 5, 6, or 7 year period, it pays out a set and guaranteed amount of income to pay for their school fees. And oftentimes that's done on a quarterly basis to meet the quarterly costs of being in school. You're 100% right. Rates will bounce around from different times, but at the moment we're sitting in the 5% range from generally 1 to 5 years, but it does change on a weekly basis.
And so once you've entered an annuity, is that interest rate or that return fixed, or is that variable? So if you decide to enter at 5% for 5 years and interest rates go down, does your payment go down?
Well, that's the beauty about it. The interest rate is guaranteed and secured once the client makes the investment. So most people often look to annuities to remove interest rate risk from the investment. So if interest rates were to increase or to decrease, you wouldn't carry the risk of those changes happening. So it would be guaranteed and fixed from the start of the policy.
And so comparing that to, say, a term deposit, because you mentioned it's like a term deposit, but it's different. So someone might lock up a term deposit for 1 year,
yep,
or 5 years. Let's say they do a 1 year term deposit, but they roll it every 12 months. At the end of that period, they might get a different interest rate every year. And typically term deposits for 1 year, you don't get your interest rate till the end. Whereas you're saying potentially you could enter a 5 year annuity. You put $100,000 in 5 years' time, you're going to get your $100,000 back. But potentially someone could set that up to get their interest on a monthly basis throughout that five-year period?
Correct. That's exactly right, Martin. And we're actually seeing a number of people push out the tenure of term annuities, particularly in today's environment. Whether we hold the view of the movement of interest rates, a number of people are starting to form the view that rates could come off at the time of recording. So we're seeing a lot of people securing rates of 3, 4, or 5 years, for example, so that they don't carry the risk that you get a great rate for 12 months today, but in 12 months' time, it's potentially a lower rate. And 24 months later, it could potentially be a lower rate as well. We're starting to see people push out the tenure so that they can receive a guaranteed level of interest over a fixed term and not carry that reinvestment risk, as they call it.
And so we'll stay on term annuities, but that's a term annuity where you get all your money back.
Yep.
But you mentioned that there's some way you can set it up so that you get nothing back at the end. And so in that case or that scenario, let's just use the same $100,000 in 5 years. If they set that up for 5 years, they still get the 5% interest along the way, but they've set it up that in 5 years, I don't want any money back. So they're getting some of that $100,000 back every month.
That's exactly right. And it's important to call out that the rate of return will be slightly different on an RCV zero term annuity compared to an RCV 100 term annuity. And a financial advisor would guide you through exactly what that is. And it's illustrated fully on the quote, but you are 100% right. Another example to help contextualize where it might be used is the first 10 years of retirement, where clients are saying, Martin, we do want to travel $20,000 every year for the first 10 years of their retirement. People might use a term annuity to guarantee that that expense is covered for the first 10 years of their retirement by using a combination of their own capital, which they've invested, plus the interest that Challenger is paying them back as well.
Yeah, and I think that's where it's a great product. It's about fitting it into your situation. And you're right, there's some times where we will use it basically just as an interest rate play to try and get a nice guaranteed interest rate. You want all your capital back and something like that. Or as you mentioned, there's a particular strategy where we just want to cover this cost for this period of time. We don't care about getting our capital back because we want to spend it along the way. So that for us with retirees, that travel is one of the big things. We have seen people do it for education costs. We've also helped a client more recently do it where they wanted to retire before 60. They know they had all their money they could access inside of their super fund at 60, and let's say they're 55. They just wanted to fund 80 grand a year for the next 5 years. They knew that they had a lump sum of money to invest and set up, and that's where a term annuity with no residual back at the end worked really well, is that effectively that was their pre-retirement pension, so to speak, that they got those payments along the way. And so effectively they spent their capital along the way and they didn't need the lump sum at the end because the door to super open in that regard. So there's a few different ways that these can be used, and potentially that's where some of that flexibility really comes in from Challenger and the annuity.
Correct. And you're 100% right, Martin, in that regard. You'll see no two annuities the same. The thematics could be similar, but the way that they're used will vary quite a lot. And there are a number of options which, for the sake of simplicity, we probably won't touch on today, whether it's to index payments, RCV, term, and beyond. This really drives that point home of the beauty of having an advisor that can guide you through that process, particularly one like yourself that's done this quite often.
Cool. So I want to move on to lifetime annuities because they are really powerful. And again, we use them. One just last question before we go on from term. Someone set that up for 5 years, 2 years in, something happens, they, you know, get a divorce or they need some money for medical reasons. Is that money locked up for that 5 years or is there any eligibility for them to get access to that earlier?
Yeah, great question. So there is eligibility to get access to the funds earlier in a term annuity, either entirely or partially. The intention, of course, is to never treat a term annuity like an at-call cash account. And we would always look to other assets first, but there is the ability to do so. A discounted cash flow is calculated on the future payments. And that calculates what lump sum is available to the client. And we are regulated with what calculation we can use.
Yeah, so I agree. It's not the intention. You wouldn't want to do that going in, but you're also, it's not completely locked up. It is accessible. So let's pivot to a lifetime annuity. So we've gone the concept now of annuity. You're handing over a lump sum of money. You're getting a regular payment back. How does a lifetime annuity differ from a term annuity?
Yeah, very good question, Martin. So a lifetime annuity differs where a term annuity, we've predetermined a period anywhere between 1 and 50 years. A lifetime annuity is quite literally a lump sum investment is made and Challenger will pay you for as long as you live, regardless of how long you live. And it's important, Martin, to frame the context with which someone might look at a lifetime annuity. And there's really three major reasons. I think the first is the psychology of the Australian retiree, where oftentimes they fall into one of two camps, which you and I have spoken about. Camp number one is that fear of running out of money. And so they live potentially more frugally than what is necessary. And at the end of their life, they look back. Oftentimes you see they've had friends of similar age pass away and they start to think, I'm leaving an expensive property to the kids. Maybe I could have spent my money a little bit more and had a greater quality of life in retirement. The other cohort, though, is the ones that spend quite aggressively early on and end up having to rip the handbrake up on their retirement. So it's important to find a wedge between the middle. Lifetime annuities often act as that wedge. The second major theme is Australians are simply living longer. If we look at the improvements to life expectancy, Australia is well up there globally for longevity. And there was an interesting fact that I came across recently. Right now in Australia, there's approximately 3,000 centenarians, so about 3,000 people 100 or older. By 2050, the projections are showing that that number is expected to be 50,000. So this view of retirement is incredibly different today, where in days gone by, retirement was an incredibly short period after someone's working life had ceased. Now it's potentially a multi-decade process. And the challenge that faces a lot of Australians is, I've earned this lump sum. I've been told for 4 or 5 decades of my life, save, 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 save. How do I draw down that capital in a way that's sustainable so I don't run out of money, but I don't also look back and think I could have lived a little bit more? And that's typically the framework for a lifetime annuity.
Yeah. So what we're saying there is at 65, I can purchase or hand over money to get a lifetime annuity. And whether I live to 85 or 95 or 105, my payments will keep coming in for as long as I'm alive.
That's exactly right.
It sounds like a pretty good deal. So, James, these lifetime annuities, they sound like something you'd look at once you're retired, probably not so much leading up to retirement. So a lot of people have their wealth inside of superannuation. How is this lifetime annuity different to a typical superannuation fund?
Sure. So the first biggest difference between a traditional super fund, if we're talking about an account-based pension, and a lifetime annuity is that an account-based pension has the potential to run out of money. As clients are depleting that income and spending it down with movements in the market, there is a chance that they could run out of money, particularly as they continue to live longer and longer. The lifetime annuity doesn't carry longevity risk because it will pay the clients for as long as they live, regardless of how long they live. So that's a very large distinction. A second distinction, which I'm sure we'll touch on in more detail later, is the favorable treatment from Centrelink that a lifetime annuity benefits from that an account-based pension doesn't necessarily benefit from. But what we often find is advisors see that the best outcome comes from blending the two together. It's not often an us or them type conversation, but can we create more income certainty and potentially better capital outcomes by combining the two? And oftentimes an advisor finds that that answer is yes.
Yeah, I think that's where I agree with you. It's not a one or the other. It's about how to combine them together because that concept is really important around that we could have $100,000 in a pension fund and someone's drawing out $8,000 a year. If it's a really good year in the markets, that might grow and they'll get benefit from that in the pension. But if it's a really poor year, a GFC-style kind of event, their pension fund would go down and therefore that $8,000 a year might last them their lifetime, but it might not. After 15 years, they might run out of that and there's nothing left in that pension. Whereas if that $100,000 was in that challenger annuity, that $8,000 figure I've made up would just continue to be paid for their lifetime. So I think that's a key and important difference that people need to consider. Just while I'm on that thought, how is that payment calculated? Does everyone get that same amount? Does it matter what the investment markets are doing? Does it matter if I apply at 65 versus 75? Who decides what I get for my $100,000 that I invest in an annuity?
So the payment rates will differ, and it's generally driven by markets, of course, on the back end, but specifically age and gender. So with women, for example, if you took a husband and wife of the same age, a woman will generally have a longer life expectancy. So you would expect her payments to be slightly lower given we're expecting to pay her for a slightly longer period. If you took a 65-year-old, their payments would be lower than someone of 75 years of age, given the 75-year-old has a shorter life expectancy and we therefore expect to pay back more quickly the investment that they've made, of course, with the interest built into those payments.
Yeah, and so that's where an advisor would, I suppose, look at some of those calculations for you, work with Challenge or an annuity provider to understand what those rates look like. Does someone invest a set amount? Is there a minimum? Is there a maximum? Or is it the other way? Do some people go, well, I want $20,000 a year, and then Challenger can tell them how much they need to put in to get $20,000 a year? How does someone approach something, setting up something like this?
So there's a couple of ways to do it. The minimum is $10,000 and it can be with superannuation or private money. It's worth calling that out. The minimum being $10,000, and people will often say, I want to achieve $10,000 from the lifetime annuity. What is the amount that I need to invest? And our tool will calculate backwards for you. The other option might be, I want to shelter a certain percentage of my assets. And so people might use a lifetime annuity to boost their age pension because of the concessional treatment. So there's many, many ways to skin a cat. There's a number of technical benefits around tax, age, pension, and beyond. And those are often guided by your advisor who will be working really closely with the Challenger BDM to help benchmark what similar advisors might be doing with similar strategies across the country.
You mentioned their tax. So if I'm getting an amount from an annuity, do I have to pay tax on it? Do I have to worry about tax on that? How does the tax implications of annuity work?
In a very simple sense, if it's purchased with superannuation money, Martin, the income is totally tax-free. If it's purchased with private money, so simply from the bank account, it's quite tax efficient. And oftentimes you'll find that there's little to no tax that's payable on the annuity. And the actual specifics, of course, your advisor would take you through. But I'd sum it up very simply. If it's superannuation, it's tax-free. If it's private money, it's quite tax efficient.
Yeah, and just explaining that as well in terms of that private money. So it might be that someone's received inheritance or they've sold a rental property. They can set up an annuity from that cash that's in their bank account or selling some shares to buy an annuity. That's where you're talking about private money, and that's potentially where some of that's taxable. But I agree, typically it's very tax efficient, minimal or low tax, but technically a consideration. Or they could look at their super fund and look at my balance in there and go, I've got $500,000 or $300,000 or $800,000 and I want to buy an annuity from there. They can effectively roll some of that money over, and that's when we're talking about that pension money. Does the payment they get change based upon how they've set that up, or is it really just to do with the tax outcome?
It's really to do with the tax outcome. So the beauty about it is the payment would be the exact same whether it was private money or superannuation money. The biggest driver is age and gender when it comes to what they'll actually be paid.
Great, James. We're going to throw it a quick break and we'll be back after this to discuss some of the myths about annuities and how they can benefit someone when it comes to the age pension.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to retireright.com.au, click get help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted retirement advisors. Our trusted retirement advisors work with clients remotely all over Australia, so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's retireright.com.au and click get help to arrange a complimentary discussion to see how they can help.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
And we're back. James, one of the questions that I get often is people are concerned about, if I hand over my money to an annuity and I die next week, does that mean it's all gone? Does my family get nothing? Is that how it works?
Martin, if there's one thing that I'd say is that the modern lifetime annuity today is in fact very, very different of old. And I see this when I'm at the family barbecue and I meet the relative's relative and they ask the question of what I do for work and we start talking about annuities. And there's definitely a lot of misconceptions that exist because a lot of people have the war story. Hey, my auntie took out an annuity 20 years ago. She passed away a week later and there was nothing left for the estate. Fortunately, the modern annuity today is incredibly different. And they have very, very favorable access to capital and very favorable death benefits. So I often use an example of a 67-year-old woman. If a 67-year-old woman took out a lifetime annuity today, she would have a 20-year period where if she wanted to voluntarily withdraw, she does have access to her capital. If she passed away within 20 years, there is a death benefit payable to her estate. And in fact, for the first 10 years, that death benefit is 100% of the investment amount, in addition to the income that the client has already received. And I think it's important to flush out the inertia of those old annuities because the modern ones do in fact have the withdrawal benefits and the death benefits built in.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad we've kind of discussed that because that is one of the biggest things that I think people have that blinders on that of, oh, I don't think that's a good thing. I don't want to hand that money over and get nothing back. But just reiterating what you said there with that 67-year-old female, and it's, I suppose, different for different ages and demographics, not the same for a 97-year-old, I'd imagine. It's not the same 20 years. But yeah, basically you're saying there is that if anything happened in the first 20 years, there would be some level of payment back out. And if it happened, so unfortunately she passed away after 8 years and we put $100,000 in, the whole $100,000 would come back plus whatever's been received for those 8 years would also still be kept. So there's a fair bit more protection in those, how they're set up. And I believe there's also another way to set that up, continuing, which is that if you've got a husband and wife together, can you set it up so that if one passes away, the remaining spouse continues to receive that annuity?
Correct. And that's actually quite common, Martin. That's called the reversionary, where the payments would quite literally revert to your spouse. So if you had a husband and wife, and one of them were to pass away and they had the other one as the reversionary, they would then continue to receive all of the income payments. If they passed away within the withdrawal and death benefit period, then something would also be payable to their estate or nominated beneficiaries.
When it reverts to that spouse, does the payment drop or is it the same level?
So it doesn't drop. There used to be this thing called a benefit reduction in the older annuities where the payments would reduce by 25 or 50%. The annuities that we have today that Challenger offer are a 100% continuation of the income. So if a wife were receiving, say, $5,000 a year and she were to pass away, that husband would then continue to receive $5,000 a year every year for as long as he lives. And it's probably worth calling out that if the original spouse passed away outside the withdrawal and death benefit period, their surviving spouse would still continue to receive the income payments. They wouldn't stop after that point either.
Yeah, and I think that's where I sometimes think of annuities are like defined benefit funds. And we've done a separate podcast talking about defined benefit funds, where that used to be the common type of super funds or pension funds, defined benefit funds. You'd retire and you'd be guaranteed an amount per fortnight for the rest of your life. And typically when you pass away, there'd be nothing left for the estate. Annuities are somewhat similar to that, or the lifetime annuities are somewhat similar to that. And again, the difference bit with a defined benefit fund is, in most of those, there is a reduction if it goes to the spouse, whereas there's lifetime pensions or lifetime annuities that is retained. And so if one of that myths or concerns are that I'm going to hand over my capital and then a month later I'm not going to hear and everybody misses out, that's not the case, particularly if you've got a spouse, you've got two lives to insure against. But with these summer protections that are built into these annuities, it's a pretty rare circumstances that someone would be worse off in an event like that.
Correct, Martin. And to take it to the second order, when people have now formed the view that the modern annuity does in fact have the withdrawal and the death benefits, it gives them a greater level of comfort. We spoke before about the combination of blending the account-based pension and the lifetime annuity. And what you typically find is through time, by blending those two together, you actually create better capital outcomes for clients and their estates. So we often hear that conception of, I don't want to make my estate worse off. I've spent a long time working. I don't want to impact my legacy for my kids. There's some really high quality modeling that exists that allows people to look at what's actually left to their estate. And that's where a financial advisor can really step in and structure a strategy that meets your particular goals. Some people simply want to spend every last dollar. Other people want to do everything to preserve for their estate or some combination of the two. And we find financial advisors are really effective in finding what that sweet spot is and helping clients achieve that goal.
And I think that's a good segue to another myth, that annuities are not an all or nothing kind of approach, is that people used to think, okay, well, if I retire, do I put it all in a pension fund or do I put it all in an annuity? The way that we approach things with our clients and the way that the messaging from Challenger often is that it's a part of your retirement. It's not your whole retirement. So if a couple are retiring with $500,000, we're not saying put the whole $500,000 into annuity. What kind of scenarios you see, you discuss some of that modeling there that advisors have the tools to use from Challenger. What kind of scenarios are you seeing that someone would put an allocation to? Is it half of it? What kind of allocation are you seeing?
So definitely the big misconception of old is that you had to invest all of your money into the annuity. That's definitely not the case today. Of course, allocations will vary depending on the overall pool of assets, but it's not uncommon, Martin, to see anywhere between 10 and 30% as a typical type allocation. Where we often see some of those larger allocations coming through is because the annuity is treated so favorably by Centrelink. Oftentimes, people are motivated to invest more into the annuity because it might mean in their circumstance, they'll get some more age pension and substantially more age pension. But of course, each thing is on a client-by-client basis. But I do stress, it's definitely not 100%. It's very rarely even 50%. And it's often much closer to generally between 10 and 30%.
For example, you may not do an annuity at all. Your $500,000 you leave in your pension fund, you might take out $30,000 a year, which is 6%. Or you might allocate $100,000 to an annuity. And depending upon your age and life expectancy, you might get back $6,000 a year or $7,000 a year out of your annuity. The remaining $400,000 you've left in your pension fund, you still draw down on that at $20,000 or $25,000 a year. So you're still getting the same overall money coming in. But what you may see is that because you're getting that fixed amount from your annuity, you may end up drawing less out of your pension fund and actually preserving that capital. So even the $100,000 you put in, you may not get any back in 25 years because you've got that coming in. The other pension you've got will actually grow by the $100,000 and make up for it. We often see that kind of in that modeling, that projection as well.
Correct, Martin. And that lends really closely into this concept of income layering. When we look at the research, and most advisors will share this of their clients, one of the main drivers in retirement is having a guaranteed secure level of income for essential spending. Doesn't have to be for all of a client's income goals, but for the essentials, whether it's the petrol, the groceries, and beyond. The idea of income layering posits that using a lifetime annuity, potentially alongside an age pension, is designed to fund for the ongoing essential spending, our essential non-discretionary spending. And that allows us to leave our account-based pension or our shares and managed funds and other market-linked sources to pay for our discretionary spending, whether it be our holidays, whether it be a renovation to the home. And what you often find is by doing those two things, You're never needing to pull income out of the account-based pension unnecessarily during a market trough, that idea of sequencing risk. And by doing that through time, what you often find is the capital outcome for the estate is improved at a time where clients have also had more certainty around their essential spending needs.
And we'll get onto the Centrelink implications there, but what you're talking about with the income layer is that a retiree might be eligible to a part pension or a full pension, and that might be giving them, you know, as a couple, $30,000 a year, and they might have just been receiving an additional $30,000 a year out of their account-based pension. But with an annuity strategy, they may set it up so they're getting $10,000 a year out of their annuity strategy, and therefore they're getting less out of their account-based pension. So in the first couple of years, they may be still getting $30,000 from Centrelink, $10,000 from annuity, $20,000 from account-based pension. But because the lifetime annuity protects for your life, if that account-based pension does run out, rather than their overall income dropping from $60,000 down to $30,000, they've got that extra protection, that extra layer, so that $10,000 a year would just continue for the rest of their life, and therefore the drop or the fall wouldn't be as significant if they ran out of their assets. And that's where I suppose the value of that layering and working with an advisor about what's relevant for you is a powerful strategy. So in terms of Centrelink, you mentioned or hinted at, and one of the key things that we look at for clients, and we've left it late in the podcast to cover, but that's the teaser to make sure people are still listening, is if I go and put $100,000 into an annuity versus keeping $100,000 in my account-based pension, I have to tell Centrelink what my assets are. Is that assessed differently for Centrelink versus keeping it in a pension or keeping it in a personal bank account?
It is, absolutely. So if you invested $100,000 into a lifetime annuity today and you're of age pension age, of course, there's an immediate 40% asset test exemption. So Centrelink are not going to look at it as $100,000. They're going to look at it as $60,000. So Martin, right now, the cutoff for a couple that own their home is, at time of recording, $1,003,000. As of 20 March 2024, that's anticipated to increase to $1,012,500. So if you took a client and you exclude the home and you said they had $1 million, if you invested $100,000 into a lifetime annuity, there's an immediate 40% asset test write-off, which would increase their pension by approximately $3,100 in the first year alone.
So what you're saying there is, even though I've given $100,000 to Challenger, my annuity is worth $100,000 with Challenger, in Centrelink's eyes, they don't assess the full amount. That sounds like a pretty good deal. Why is that the case?
When we look at the way people spend in retirement, oftentimes in the earlier, more active years of retirement, people do spend a lot more discretionarily. They've got the ability to travel. They definitely want to go out and see their friends. And so what this change in or concessional treatment does, rather, is it effectively brings forward their spending. It provides what some advisors have called a sugar hit, where people will say, if you can give me $1,000 today, I will take $1,000 today over $1,000 in 10 years' time. The concessional treatment of the annuity brings forward their age pension entitlement so that in the more active years of their retirement, they've got the ability to go out and spend with confidence.
And so it's important there that, yeah, you're right, there's that sugar hit or double benefit is I put my $100,000 into my annuity. If I'm a part pensioner, which a lot of Australians are, that means that not only am I going to get the X amount a year from Challenger, and that depends upon your age, but that might be somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000.
Yep.
But they'll also get an uplift from the age pension, and that figure with $100,000 we use. So that's an extra $3,000 a year. So potentially that's a pretty significant increase for their $100,000 they've invested, that they could be getting an extra 7, 8, 10% a year of income when you combine those two things together. And there's no real investment risk for the individual. The investment risk is passed on to Challenger now and to the Centrelink age pension. And so I guess that's where you're seeing a lot of incentives. Has that always been the case, or is that a more recent change, some of these age pension incentives?
So this law has existed since 1 July of 2019. There have been other laws that have existed in the past. The good news is the federal government has had a great track record of grandfathering rules. So one question we get asked is, if we took out this annuity, if the rules change, are we going to have a different treatment? Now, of course, there's no guarantee, but the track record has showed that the federal government's been really consistent in grandfathering, which simply means to honour the old assessments of when the person took out the annuity.
Now, that sounds pretty good, and that's where we discuss that with a lot of clients. Now, if you're a full-age pensioner and you're already getting a full pension, you're not going to get that extra uplift. You still get a lot of value from the annuity, but you're not going to get that pension uplift. But if your assets are between, say, roughly $400,000 and $1 million for a couple, there's that significant uplift. And or if you're just above that top threshold, you're at 1.1 or 1.2, potentially that's the way to get you under that top limit or closer. So that's a 40% reduction. Does that stay the same for the rest of your life?
That becomes a 70% reduction once the client meets two criteria. The first is reaching age 84, and the second is having held the lifetime annuity for 5 years. And that second exemption of 70% comes in often at a time where people might be considering moving into aged care. And that's a separate conversation, but it's so it has some efficient interaction with aged care fees and with the age pension later on in life. The income is 40% income test exempt the whole way through. So it's one assessment the entire way through for the income.
And so just quantifying that, that $100,000 I put in, I'm 75 years of age. At day one, it's only assessed at $60,000. But fast forward 10 years, I'm now 85. What does that $100,000 come down to?
It'll be assessed as $30,000.
Which again, I guess that would give you more age pension again if you're a par pensioner, which is further increases that value. And the payment from Challenger or the annuity provider, that's still the same. And potentially, and we didn't discuss all that, protected by inflation as well. So you're still getting the same money from the annuity provider, but you're actually just getting even more money again from the age pension. So sounds like a good deal and something people should be considering for sure. One of the other myths that I suppose I just wanted to touch on around is that, well, where does my money go? What does Challenger do with it? How do I know that I'm protected? I'm handing over my investment risk to Challenger. How or another provider? What happens? Where does my money go? How is that looked after?
So, Martin, any investment that's made into any of Challenger's annuities, whether it's term, whether it's lifetime, or whether it's our aged care annuity, that money is pulled into our statutory fund. And that statutory fund is ring-fenced and regulated by APRA, which is the same institution that regulates the banks, to give people the comfort to know it falls under the same regulatory body as what the banks fall under. Now, APRA very strictly regulate the way that we invest our money to ensure we can continue to meet ongoing payments for clients. And they give us what's called a prescribed capital amount, or PCA, where they basically say this is the minimum level of capital that you need to hold in that statutory fund so that we're comfortable you can meet the repayments for your clients. Now, as at 31 December 2023, Challenger currently hold 1.5 times our PCA, so 1.5 times the minimum that APRA are requiring of us. And something like the GFC, to provide context, is a 1-in-80-year type financial shock. Challenger hold enough capital to withstand the equivalent of a 1-in-200-year financial shock with today's prescribed capital amount of 1.5. And a really important track record to call out is Challenger, having been established in 1985, has been through a number of turbulent market cycles, and in all of those circumstances has continued to meet all payments of their annuity holders throughout.
Yeah, so that money's invested, it's providing a return, and that's how Challenger's paying for this. And importantly, as you said there, that the pool of money, like with other insurance providers and life insurance and car insurance, et cetera, that money's invested in a pool of money, and it sounds like there's a pretty significant amount of money in there to cover that. The GFC was a pretty significant and left lots of scars. I wouldn't want to be facing a 1 in 200 event. And so we're pretty comfortable in terms of how that's set up and managed and importantly regulated from the government. Challenger's not just doing this on their own back. It's heavily regulated to make sure that there's security in these type of investments. And I think that's a good just little segue again, which I think we touched on earlier, but it's important to probably come around to a little bit, is that some of that psychology, there's the psychology of running out of my money, but there's also that psychology of investing. A lot of people might be really conservative or nervous and investing in very defensive assets, and that might only be getting a lower return at 2 or 3 or 4% because they just don't want to take that risk. They don't want a market crash to impact their super. So something like an annuity, I suppose, effectively is handing over that risk. Is that a concept that's fair to say about an annuity?
So Martin, when it comes to the investment risk piece, it very much is outsourcing that level of thinking and that level of volatility within the portfolio. So oftentimes an annuity is funded out of the defensive part of the portfolio. So it leaves the growth on one side of the portfolio and the defensive on the other. The use of the annuity in that particular circumstance means that regardless of the way interest rates move, regardless of the way equity markets or fixed income markets move, and one point I'm going to hone in on around inflation, regardless of what inflation does for some of our products, clients don't have to worry, am I going to have enough to retire? They don't have to worry, is my balance going to go down? Because Challenger in FY23 have had a record year. We've just announced our half year for FY24, with December being a record month. And a big driver behind that was the growth in lifetime annuity sales. Lifetime annuities most typically have the payments indexed in line with CPI. So we mentioned if you took, say, a 67-year-old male today, $100,000, he might receive $5,500 in the first year. The payments are then indexed every year thereafter in line with inflation if the client chooses. So in the environment we're in, where people are complaining and finding challenges with a rising cost of living, using a sleeve from the annuity means that they have a portion of income that's always protected from a changing cost of living.
Yeah, I think that's another factor as well, is that the returns on annuities, it's not black and white. It doesn't need to be, because there's so many moving parts with life expectancy. But someone might look at an annuity and go, oh, I'm handing over $100,000. I'm only going to get back $7,000 a year. That's 7%. My super fund last year did 8 or 9. Why would I do that? Well, there's a bit more involved in that. It's not as black and white as that, because A, we've touched on that age pension benefit, and that potentially could be a pretty significant of 3% or more return on top of that. There's products that have that inflation protection, as you touched on, and your super fund, yes, that inflation's in part of that return, but really it needs to be discounted off from that. And inflation doesn't go in a straight line, as we know. There are years or quarters where it's pretty significant, and the current environment we're living in is part of that at the moment. But also, yes, a super fund might have returned 8, 9, 12% in 1 year, but we also know there'll be years when they return 2% or minus 12%. And that's where that annuity effectively does kind of protect part of that money. And again, I think that's the emphasis, is that we're not saying let's go and put all your money into an annuity, but it's that layer, it's that sleeve, it's that protection mechanism that really works well to give someone that peace of mind in retirement, that I'm retiring at 65, 67, 70, here's my lump sum of money. How do I know that's going to last? Adding something like in this really helps them achieve that goal.
And to that point exactly around the comparison with the super funds, for it to be a like-for-like comparison, we often find advisors will compare it more so to the defensive part of the performance of the super fund as opposed to the entire pie, because an annuity is not to be compared with equities, as equities aren't to be compared with annuities, because their risk and return characteristics are quite different. So we often find that for the annuity's return, if you will, to be accurately compared to something, it's more often compared to fixed income, cash and term deposits, and other defensive assets of that nature.
So James, we've covered lots today. Back to the start of the episode, there was term annuities. There's reasons how, why, and people use those. We've spent a lot of time talking about lifetime annuities, which is the more common one and has a particular use for lots of retirees. There's obviously a large impact on people in that part pension age, but also really an annuity is available to anybody for any reason. Where do you kind of see them getting the most benefit in terms of people looking at annuity for their retirement structure?
The most benefit for using annuity comes for people that want to have a guaranteed layer of income that doesn't carry with it market risk, rate risk, or inflationary risk. And again, it's not to be us or them, but really it's to be used as a layer of income, often alongside other market-linked sources like an account-based pension or even other non-market-linked sources like the government age pension.
James, thanks for joining us. That's been super valuable. We've discussed a lot about annuities, how they should be used, where people should consider using them. Hopefully people see that there's a massive benefit that they should at least consider this. There is some complexity. Working with an advisor is making sure you get this set up the right way for that. So if you want to find out, contact your advisor. Jump on the RetireEye website to be in touch with an advisor if you think an annuity might apply in your situation. James, thanks for joining us.
Martin, an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on, and we really appreciate all the work you're doing on the RetireEye podcast.
Thank you, mate. And if you get value from this, feel free to share it on with your socials, with your friends. Jump onto the Facebook group on RetireEye, because there'll be plenty of discussion on there on the back of this episode.
We
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.